Welcome, everyone, to the episode 7 of the Office Hours podcast. Today we have with us Mo, and let's figure out the kind of topics we're going to dig into today.
How are you doing, Vasily?
I'm doing rather well, thank you. It's been a nice week. We had a bit of a long weekend, so yeah. All things considered, everything's going great, except I think we're heading for a bit of a heat wave for the next few days. Yeah. Extreme temperatures and all that. But you know, I have an air conditioner, so I'm not worrying.
Honestly, that's quite interesting, because like I've been noticing like we're having a lot of cold temperatures around here. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of unusual. Most people just feel like maybe summer is done and we're starting to move into fall, which can be accurate based on predictions. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
The summer is starting to wrap up, which is kind of sad. Although, you know, I can't complain. We had really great summer this year. It started really mm-hmm. early. It was really warm.
Yeah.
We had like a little bit of rain here and there, which was also nice to kind of break it up a little bit, give the grass a chance to grow back at least somewhat. So, you know, if it continues in September, it'll be really magnificent. So for Vancouver, this is an excellent weather.
Yeah. I think I feel the same way. I was actually saying the same thing, like start really early, because one time I was having this kind of conversation mm-hmm. and we were talking about how like it's possible that we're going to have like really bad winter this year.
Mm.
I want to stay positive. I just say, I think it would be better. And the argument was like, oh, we had a really cold summer and that should translate into us having even worse winter.
Mm.
And I don't want to believe that. I want to say maybe nature is going to compensate us with an even warmer winter. So
yeah. How cold does it usually get out there? It gets pretty cold, right?
Oh yeah, it gets really cold. Mm-hmm. I've experienced the coldest I've ever experienced around here is -40.
Okay, yeah. Actually out where you live, or just in general?
No, in Quebec, in Montreal.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, a couple of years ago, I went up north, northern BC,
mm-hmm.
like into the oil field territory. One of my friends lives there and works there, and we experienced like -45 outside.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's really cold out there, like crazy. Yeah. These guys work in this crazy weather in the winter. Yeah. Usually they don't work in the spring because the roads, they're all like Forest Service roads. So in the spring, when there's a lot of rain, and in fall, all the roads get washed out.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're driving these really heavy rigs, they can't really do it safely. So, but in the winter, everything freezes solid.
Yeah.
So that's where they work. They work in like those -40 conditions with wind and everything.
It's crazy. Intense. It's crazy. I was looking at it on the weather app.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to experience it. I was just like, that's it. I don't want to know what it feels like at all.
Yeah. Yeah,
because but the thing is, like here after -20, it feels the same because it's the same amount of pain on your body. Because it just
that's true. Well, mercifully, Vancouver never really gets that cold. I think like -10 is probably the worst that we experience out here.
Must be really nice. You
know, being really wedged between the ocean and the mountains does help. It has like this weird local climate that isn't really happening anywhere else. Oh, well, enough with the weather.
Anyway, so today I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, how we work these days,
mm-hmm.
remote work in tech. I've noticed like a lot of companies these days actually prioritize remote working over like us getting back into the office.
Mm-hmm.
And I know like, a lot of people in the beginning felt very divided about it.
Yeah.
Like on one side, you want to have the opportunity to be in your comfort of your home and do your work. And on the other side, you miss the social interaction and other benefits of working alongside people in your office. Yeah. But I'm curious, like, what is it like for you? Like, how has it been your adaptation to this type of work?
Yeah. That's a really good question. It's been, so I've been working from home for the last couple of years, about 2 years. Like when the lockdowns hit, I continued to go to the office, me and like three other people out of like a 200 person office.
Yeah.
So it was very deserted, but you know, had some benefits. Getting mm-hmm. to work was really fast because the highways were completely yeah. empty. And yeah, you are certainly right in all of the things you mentioned, because there's like pros and cons for both. I really enjoy not having to spend like an hour and a half to 2 hours in traffic every day. That's mm-hmm. been great.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely enjoy not having to like pay for gas to drive there and like parking and all of those different mm-hmm. things. It's mm-hmm. definitely massive time saver as well. But then on the negatives, you know, my personal style of work is very kind of being very engaged, in a sense that when you work in close proximity to a group of people working on a project, and you know, maybe it comes back from my mentorship days at a boot camp, where you just look at a person and they have this particular puzzled stare in their eyes. They're just like you can tell that they're confused about what's happening, and mm-hmm. so it's a great opportunity to just come by and be like, hey, what's happening, right? Let me show me what you're stuck with, and then you kind of work together and get them unstuck and progress with the project. So that tended to work really, really well. It was like a lot of opportunities for quick interventions. But you know, with remote work, I think people who get stuck because there isn't anybody who can immediately identify that just from the visual cues and help them out, they tend to get stuck for longer. And like with the nature of Slack, sometimes I think people think it's kind of impolite to just interrupt you with things, or you know, it's a different modality of how that usually happens. And like, it's practically impossible to just initiate random conversations with people as well. Like all of your in-person quote unquote communication happens like in the confines of some scheduled meeting that was scheduled ahead of time. I mean, we use Slack huddles quite a lot, which is kind of nice for a little like impromptu voice connect with a screen share. But usually, again, like you usually initiate those where you have something particular that you want to ask or you want to talk about. Like nobody starts a huddle to just banter for 5 minutes and like just, you know, talk about unrelated mm-hmm. things and kind of relax. So that part is missing. It's much harder to make more meaningful connections with your colleagues because you only talk about work-related items. There's no like water cooler talk. And like if a company or a team organizes these in-person events, they are few and far between, and now more and more people are remote. So my company currently, they're basically trying to get people to go back to the office. So there's two parallel trends. There's a trend of companies going more remote, and then there's companies who were in person, they did remote, and now they want to bring everybody back for whatever reason. But there's a lot of resistance to that because, again, the conveniences are definitely outweighing the perceived benefit of being in the office. Plus, a lot of people, I think that, oh, you know, my manager doesn't trust me unless he can see what I'm doing every day. And that also tends to put people off, right? Because when you work remote, the only thing you can be really judged on is your objective output. So if that doesn't suffer, why would I need to go back? What's the point of that? So people don't really see the point in it. And it seems kind of like, well, why do we have to do it? It doesn't make any sense, right? Where was I going with this?
Well, I think I agree with you. Like, I think that's also where I stand. Like, if the objectives mm-hmm. are actually met, like, I'm not too sure if there is a really keen need to actually change this type of work style. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, there are certain things that you can look at and see how some people might suffer. For example, you mentioned your style of work. I noticed that when we were in the office, there were some people that they were just like social, really, and they find more energy in like interactions and like, they help the team spirit and like they bring more motivation and all these kind of things. So like you can really feel their presence in the office. These are people. And there are other type of people that they just come to the office with a hoodie on and just get their job done and leave the place. And but I'm curious, right? Like for these type of people, I'm not too sure which one you fall into. I would imagine like maybe a little bit of both, no?
I think a little bit of both. I'm more naturally introverted in a sense that the prolonged exposure to like big group of people tends to drain me more than recharge me. Because I think for extroverts, they like thrive in that environment. For me, I'm perfectly fine having interactions with people as long as I know that whenever I feel like it, I can just bail and not be present anymore, right? And if I know that that's possible, like in the office, at the end of the day, you go home and you don't have to really interact with anybody. So I can be as jovial as necessary in the moment, but at some point, I would like to go home and not have to interact with people. And I think for extroverts, they have to be interacting with people. And so the lockdowns were really, really difficult for them because they got completely isolated. Like for introverts, it was like, woohoo, no one's bothering me anymore. That's so great. But for extroverts, like, oh my God, this is torture. This is like being in solitary confinement, you know?
But how do you feel about the brainstorm? Say, let's say, for example, you are working on something, and are you usually the type of, I think it also depends on your level, really, like on everyone's level of understanding of like the code base and like technical abilities and whatnot and like style, personality, whatnot. But usually when you're trying to solve a problem, really, do you prefer like brainstorming sessions or like I figure it out and I die figuring it out kind of person? Like,
I think that depends on a sort of project that you're doing. And I think brainstorming sessions was also one of the victims of remote work because it's much more difficult to do it in a meeting. It's much harder to participate when you're in a Zoom meeting because, like, most people these days don't turn their webcams on. I heard from people that they experience anxiety being on a webcam all the time because, people work out of a comfort and privacy of their own homes. So like nobody's dressing up for work. You can be like in your pajamas, your work starts early in the morning. You wake up, you don't even take your pajamas off. You just like make yourself a cup of coffee and you go for your Zoom meeting. And you're not going to turn the webcam on because, your hair is all messed up and you're like wearing like home clothing, which would be inappropriate in that scenario. And because people don't turn the webcam on, especially, if they're not expected to actively contribute in a sense, like, okay, during stand-up, how many people like actually listen to what other people are saying during stand-up on Zoom? You just sort of zone out until it's your turn, and then you say whatever you need to say. So it's very easy to get distracted in these types of meetings. And in brainstorming meetings, you don't see people, you don't see their facial expressions, you don't see what they're looking at. Because even on Zoom, like I can be looking directly in a camera, but there's no whiteboard where both of us are looking at and each one of us can tell what specific thing the other person is looking at. And yeah, it's easy to get distracted by something. Sometimes you see on Zoom, you're like talking to somebody and then in the group someone's like staring into the second monitor. So like you can tell that he completely tuned out. And then you kind of catch
That
yourself. I even remember, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. Like I was doing these things where I had like two monitors and
happened.
I would usually if I'm on Zoom, I kind of I look at my own face, weirdly enough. I sometimes look at other people's faces, but I also look at my own face. Because the other thing too is I think the brain doesn't perceive the camera as an observer. And so, like, you might not always feel like somebody else is watching you effectively. And I don't know. I might start like picking my nose or something on autopilot. And I'm like, well, I have to catch myself from doing that. Because again, you wouldn't do that in an in-person setting because your brain registers, like, okay, there's people around here, so don't do weird things. But I don't think it registers the camera the same way. And so I kind of look at myself to if I start doing something like that I shouldn't be doing in that setting, I'll be like, I'll stop myself. And then, you know, I would be looking at myself in the window, but then I have something open on my other monitor, and so I would like turn away from that monitor to look at what's there. And then it was like, oh man, I've been staring at that thing for so long. So what I would do is like I would drag the window with the thing on the other monitor, and then like I will swap them around. So if I defer my attention back, it would be looking like I'm still looking at the camera and everything that's happening, but in fact I'm like completely tuned out. So in a way it's kind of terrible. And I guess in a sense it also highlights that like a meeting with 10 people in it is just completely useless for like at least 7 of them. Like most of people, they don't really contribute. And I think, okay, like some people maybe they don't want to, or maybe they feel shy. There's like some social, psychological impediment. You know, a lot of times in meetings on Zoom, there's like these heavy pauses where everybody's expecting somebody else to speak. And unless there's a person that sort of takes that role of moving the conversation forward and filling all of these pauses, most people are always in a position of like the bystander problem. Sorry, the plane's flying overhead. I like to keep my window open, otherwise I'll get cooked in here. So yeah, like people are in the problem, the bystander problem, you know, like if there's an accident, everybody expects somebody else to call 911. So they say, if you're in that situation, like point out a specific person, be like, you call 911, you call 911. So that person has an impetus to actually do something because otherwise everybody thinks somebody else will do it. Like, why would I have to? If I call and somebody else calls, we just distract the 911 operators even more. So maybe I shouldn't because somebody else probably already did, and then no one does. So it's kind of the same situation, right? Everybody thinks like, oh, you know, somebody will say something, and then everyone's just kind of sitting there. And because the camera is off, it becomes weird. You're like, well. And the longer it gets drawn out, the more uncomfortable it gets for everyone, up until somebody like finally starts speaking up. But that creates the other extreme. It's like I find myself talking all the time. And it's like, is it good? Am I just trampling over everybody else who wants to say something, but they can't put in a word edgeways?
I think you see like this my opinion about that is like first I think it depends on like the company culture because on my side my own experience I think like maybe there are some policies that can be put in place for the camera thing. For example, like you could work in your pajamas, but when you have your meetings, they are not impromptu meetings, they are scheduled meetings. So you would know that these meetings are at this certain time. So you can prepare for them. Preparing for your meeting also can include like, you know, having the proper outfit for your meetings because it's just as a respect for the meeting. But I think like when it comes to like contributing to in the meetings, there are certain factors for this. Like for example, I think personality number one. For example, I use myself as an example. I'm the type of person like I don't want to really just talk just because just because someone needs to say something.
Right.
I prefer to say something if I know and what I'm about to say is absolutely necessary.
Right.
So I do this. Yeah. This is just me. Mm-hmm. But in a meeting like this, like I think also aside from this, there are some people that are supposed to be like probably subject matter experts in certain things that we are discussing.
Mm-hmm.
So some people I really expected to know more about certain things. For example, in my team, like there are certain things that when we discuss need to be expected of me to have something to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, like everybody knows where you are needed to say something, depending on the type of meetings too. Like when we used to work with Scrum, mm-hmm. like when we have like grooming meetings or like, you know, those, yeah. those kind of meetings, like maybe most people that will be talking now will be people with more knowledge of like the code base, like maybe like more, older devs or like subject matter experts, for example. But I think aside from this also, maybe it also depends on like the animator of these meetings, because sometimes I think the energy of the animator also matters. Like you can't open a meeting and be like, and then no good mornings and no greetings, and everybody's just like there, just like, oh, we're here, you know, yeah. and so what are we doing today? So, yeah. you know, so I think the energy of the animator also matters. But I just think this is how I feel about it. And maybe like this is just like my own experience of it mm-hmm. so far. And I think maybe some form of complacency, because for example, if you have an interview,
yeah,
like how we do like remote work, we yeah. also do like remote interviews, right?
Yeah.
And you would not say because your interview is at 9 o'clock in the morning, then, oh, you're still in your pajamas at 9 o'clock in the morning, then you won't put on clothes. Like, yeah, you won't yeah. show up for your interview in the pajamas. Of course.
like, you know, I remember seeing this funny video. I don't know if it was like staged or yeah. where there's like these two guys on a call and they're like wearing like suits and everything. It's like some lawyer type deal, very professional. Mm-hmm. And then one of them has to stand up for some reason because like some like his dog enters the room or something, or he jumps on him and he stands up and he's like wearing like briefs, like basically, you know, business in the top and then like basically nothing at the bottom, and he like gets yeah. very embarrassed, and then the other guy stands up and he's like wearing shorts as well, but just like the top part of the suit, yeah. you know. Yeah. You know, there's that channel on YouTube where he has this rig where it has like a green screen mounted behind him and a camera in the front. And he like he joins calls while like there was one where he's like driving a bicycle. There's another one where he's like in the middle of a boxing match and gets the knocked out. And he's like joining the meeting. I think at first it was kind of like this weird prank, and then he turned it into his shtick. So it obviously everybody knows by now, but in the beginning it was like he's like pedaling on his bicycle, but because of the green screen it kind of looks like he's
yeah just oh home. I think I know it again.
You probably seen some of it. Yeah.
So,
I think people are trying to have fun with it. But yeah, for some things, I would definitely prefer being with other people from my team. And so, like, the companies, they have mandates. Like, mm-hmm. our company is trying to get, like, there's different entities. There's, like, the more sales-oriented corporate entity, and then there's the digital entity, which I'm part of. And so they try to impose their rules on everybody, and we're like, no, but we're special, we don't want to play by those rules. Mm-hmm. So they say now, oh, two days out of a month you're supposed to show up in the office. Right. And it's like you're supposed to show up in the office, butts in seats type deal, which is, again, it's like, what's the point, right? Why at least make it meaningful. Like, leave it up to your team in terms of how you want to implement this, because if everybody shows up on different days, well, that's useless, right? Because you're still going to be in virtual meetings most of the time. You're just going to be that person at the office mm-hmm. joining a Zoom call versus you being at home joining a Zoom call. So there's like 0 point to that. Like, get everybody together and, you know, figure out a way to stagger it, not to overload the space. if you downsized on like the parking or if you downsized on office space, and actually have people collaborate. But now the team, like I'm remote. They're in Toronto, I'm in Vancouver. There's like zero chance of me going there. I mean, our company has an office in Vancouver, but nobody
Oh,
there knows
nice.
who I am. I could, in theory, request an access card and like drive there and be like, hello. And they're like, who are you? I'm like, oh, I'm some Joe Schmo out of digital. And okay, well, what's the point of me being there? I'm just gonna be on Zoom with all of my coworkers. Only now, instead of starting the day at 7 to join the stand-up, I have to start it at 5:30 to drive there to join the stand-up at 7. So it's just completely moronic. So I think a lot of it, I find, the concept of cargo cult really interesting in like software and IT in general. Do you know what a cargo cult is?
No, not sure, really.
Okay. I really get a kick out of explaining this thing. So basically during World War II, in the Pacific Theater, Americans had these bases for refueling aircrafts on some tiny islands in like Polynesia or whatever. So it's like a tiny island, and they get there, they build their base for refueling planes, and they build like an airstrip, they build a port, and all these planes come in and they deliver cargo. And the native population there, well, I mean, they're not just gonna ignore them, they're gonna give them some of the food and some of the stuff. So there's these planes bringing in cargo, and with cargo comes prosperity. And then the war is over, and the Americans, go back and leave everything there. No more planes are coming, no more cargo's coming. That's a kind of a bad situation. So what do we do? Well, we've observed them doing their weird rituals, so we'll just do the same. And so they had like people in a tower wearing headphones made out of a pair of coconuts, and like there'd be people on runway doing the signals for plane landings and takeoffs. But the cargo doesn't come. So you're like, you're going through all of the motions.
Oh,
You're
God.
going through all of the correct motions that you've observed that were bringing results, but the results don't show up. And instead of thinking, well, maybe the motions weren't the precursor to the result, you double down and you start doing the motions twice as hard. And it's like, oh, you're doing it wrong. You're not signaling properly. The gods are not convinced by your performance. No cargo for you. And in a sense, a lot of that same concept applies where, I've been in a situation where it's like, oh, very successful company. Well, I was going to say very successful company X, but I can't really use that anymore because X is now a freaking company. So very successful company Y uses Ruby on Rails, therefore that's the key to their success. And if we use Ruby on Rails, we're going to be successful as well. That's like a cargo
True.
cult mentality. You're going through the
Yeah,
motions without
absolutely.
understanding what makes it work.
Excellent.
And so the
Accurate.
return to the office, I think it's some cargo cult mechanic. It's like, if we do these actions, we're gonna improve some metric without understanding that there's no correlation and there's like actually other factors that drive this metric. But because we don't know for a fact, we can only judge from some external property, which is going to double down. We're going to get everybody to the office because that would work before, right?
But I think I understand in a way. I'm just gonna play like devil's advocate here, and I would say like I understand the idea behind trying to return everybody to the office, but I don't know if it's a good idea, but I understand it. And what I'm gonna say is like, so for example, when it comes to like in the social aspect of it, I think aside from the fact that you get to interact with people, it also kind of like improves work in a way. However, it depends on like different people. I think there should be a choice for it. Like you can choose if you want to be in the office, Or if you want to be at home, I
Mm-hmm.
think that would be like the best idea. But because like it depends on different people. Me, for example, I like to work in a controlled environment where like I can have like a controlled environment. I don't have to, I won't be distracted by someone walking beside me or like someone making a joke or like I don't want to have to cover my ears like with big headphones and be like, oh, noise cancellation every time. Like,
I
no,
see.
I just want to be in an environment where it's controlled. However, there are other kind of people like this is what helps them to be even more productive. Good example would be people who prefer to go to like coffee shops to work, for example, and they feed off of the productive energy in a different environment. And also like if you look at like collaborations, for example, like I think collaborations is quite easier in person
Oh yeah, of course.
because you can just like get up from your chair and just go to the next person and be like, hey, I was doing this, like what do you think about this? Or like we're working on something like this. So I had this experience like recently, like I was in the office, which and then we started like talking about stuff, and it's something that we usually like might have taken like a few days for us to go back and forth on Slack messages or like
Yeah, you can
trying to
solve it
find
in like 10 minutes, right?
exactly, and then we just like figured it out in like few minutes, and then I just in that moment I thought about it like, well, I think I understand now, but the problem is there is also like a lot of I don't know if the word is overhead. Like now, like the people with work remote work, it gives a lot of people the time to really like plan their life and do more things, prioritizing yourself and all. So maybe the turnover is more than it used to be because at least like even if you don't like what you do, you probably like who you do it with. Maybe you have a routine of going somewhere after work with your teammates, or like you just like your friends at work, and that's the reason why
No, for
you're
sure.
staying at work. You don't have that anymore. It's not really there now. Like
Well, it's weird because this company and the previous company, I mean, at the previous company, I knew a couple of people ahead of time before I started working there. Like, I met them in person. But at my current company, like, I never met anyone in person. So I joined when it was completely remote. Like, two companies ago, when I worked there for several years in the office with everybody, it was a different group dynamic. Even after the lockdowns, when everybody started working from home, because we already made those connections in person. Like, we talked about ourselves, we talked about our lives in a way. We had this thing which was really interesting. Like, we had a retro every couple of weeks, right? And so for the retro, we reserved like an hour, basically. It was a big team, but it was like an hour, and it was called the question of the day, where one person, and it would like rotate. One person asks the question of the day, and then everybody just talks about what they think. And it would just be completely random questions, right? But it shows people from a different perspective and shows how they think about things and like what they value. Like, so it makes bonding a little bit easier, right? But in a completely remote scenario, that's very difficult. And it's kind of funny too, because when you were talking about controlled environment, I was like, oh, he's talking about the office, right? And then you said, oh, I don't like people walking around and joking. I'm like, oh, yeah, he's talking about home. Because for me, I think I want to have a very clear distinction of space for work and space at home. And right now, the remote work blended them entirely. It's like, am I at work? Or am I at home? Can I disconnect from, like, I had to learn to shut it off entirely in terms of thinking about work-related things. Because before, it was more natural. You leave the office, you drive home, you like switch between the worlds. You get through the doorway, you leave everything behind. Now, I mean, okay, now I press a button to switch between my two computers. I switch from my work computer to my home computer, where I can, I don't know, like watch some videos or play some video games or work on some side projects or whatever. And you kind of have to train your brain in a sense to make that delineation between one and the other. And I think after a couple of years of remote work, a lot of people figured that out. But in the beginning, I heard that everybody was overworking quite considerably because there was no delineation. There wasn't like, oh, everybody's kind of starting to stretch, get up and pack their stuff and leave out the door. And so you just continue, right? Because, and again, it's like pandemic and lockdown. What the hell else are you gonna do? And I think maybe, yeah, just having these, because the other thought I had was, oh, the company just signed a 5-year lease with the property and empty office looks really shitty on a balance sheet. So let's get everybody in. At least then we can justify having it. That maybe is one of the contributing factors.
Maybe.
And then the other thing is, in the beginning where everybody switched to remote, at first it was kind of weird because people weren't really used to it. Like the communication channels were kind of odd. And but then maybe like about a year into it, everybody kind of mostly figured it out. And because of this, I have nothing better to do. Everybody started putting way more work at work. And maybe overall, the overall perceived productivity risen. Everyone's like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like everybody's super productive. And now that, pandemic is over, the lockdowns are over, at least most people seem to think that way. There's like still some stragglers that are like, anyway, but people learn to make that delineation between life and work, even though they share the same space, which usually, I guess, in a professional environment, that didn't really happen before. There was office and there was home, right? Now it's the same, but people learn to distinguish between the two. And the productivity probably returned to the regular levels. And now everyone's like, well, the longer we do this work from home thing, the worse the productivity gets. Again, harkening back to the conversation we had with like baseline versus the dip, it's like you just had like an overproduction due to external circumstances. Now it's returning to a baseline, but you're perceiving it as a drop into like the negative territory because you get used to good things really fast, right? But getting used to bad things or the return to normalcy, that takes a while. So maybe that part also drives it.
I
So,
agree with
yeah.
you. I agree with you. And to be honest, like switching this thing recently, I started considering having like more than one workstation at home because I want to feel like, oh, I left this workstation to go to another workstation to like have like separation. But you're right, like you have to find a way to make that switch clear in your head that you are out of the office and you can do other things for yourself. But speaking of like workstations and like separating things, do you also agree that a person is only as good as his tool? How do you see that? Like someone, like you are just as good as the tools that you work with. How do you call it? Artisan trade? Like, how do you say that?
I think there is that idea. I don't know if I necessarily agree, because, well, how would I put it?
So, for example, yeah. So, like, now that we work from home, in the office, usually, like, the company provides like a workstation. You probably have like two screens, extra a nice table, ergonomic chair, whatnot. Like, you have all the things you need, probably some breakfast, whatever, all these things around. But now you have to create all these things yourself, and maybe like some people, you can tell like some people like in some meetings like, maybe they sound different or maybe like a little bit like the conditions different. We don't all have the same conditions really. It's quite different for everyone. But it get me curious, because I read that quote somewhere. I don't remember who said it, and I even don't remember the exact words, but it felt like that. Like a person is only as good as, let's say, like you have like a really 14 in, how do you say, like 14 inches screen, or like you have this ultra wide screen where you can see your code in like 4K and like you can see everything. Eating those kind of things like help you to be like better productive, or like you don't really believe that. It's
I
just
think whatever, well, maybe a lot of it to me, I guess, boils down to a kind of a placebo effect. If you think that having a big monitor's ultra wide screen curved, 48 inches, so you can have 25 windows side by side, if you think that makes it more productive, it probably does. I'm like, my own style is very minimalistic. I spend most of my days in like a full screen terminal, like classic shell, no fancy IDE. And so when people see how I work, they're like, you live like this? I'm like, it's perfectly comfortable for me. It does everything I needed to do and then some. And so having more sophisticated tools wouldn't necessarily make me. Yeah, you see, I had this analogy in my head. Like, as a non-professional, like, I have a hammer at home. If I need to like hammer in a nail or pull a nail out or something like that, and that's perfectly fine for me. But then if you go to a professional woodworking shop, they're gonna have like 14 different kinds of hammers because they're specialized for very specific tasks. And because I know not, or like metalwork probably even more because there's a ton of specific tools, right? And so I don't know how to use them, and I don't therefore perceive their value. To me, like a hammer is a hammer is a hammer, right? Because I just don't know the difference. So maybe in that sense, but then again, if you give me all of the nicest hammers in the world because I don't know how to use them, they are of no benefit to me at all. And a professional who truly knows what he's doing, he'll make do with the tools at hand. If he doesn't have his array of 14 specialized hammers, he'll figure out a way to maybe at the expense of like time spent or maybe slight degradation in quality, he'll be able to get the job done using the tools on hand because he knows why those tools are there. Like if you just give somebody the most advanced tools, it's like giving a 16-year-old who just learned how to drive a Formula One car. It's like it's the most powerful thing in terms of cars, maybe, well, maybe not, but very sophisticated, very purpose-built. But because you don't know what to do with it, is it going to be of any use to you? Probably not. So I don't entirely sure, I don't fall into that camp of, better tools will make you better. Like you have to get better for you to appreciate the utility of better tools. I think it has to go that way. It can't go the other way around because otherwise, you give anybody the most advanced tool and all of a sudden they become a professional. That doesn't work like that, right? So it doesn't really make sense.
So you think it's like most answers in software engineering where you say it depends. Because I think I agree with you that you have to get better to be able to appreciate better tools. But at the end of the day, when you get to the point where you've gotten better, I think then better tools help you to be productive.
I think you have to understand the point at which it is worthwhile to invest in better tools. I think there's that fallacy, and I have two examples. One of the examples is one day my girlfriend and I, we went out and we bought a really nice mattress, and it changed our life. And we were like, God damn it, why did we wait so long? We should have done it so much sooner. It's
Yeah,
so
I
much
remember
better. It's
that.
just so much better. Why were we suffering for extra couple of years? We could have done it then. We only waited until now, right? And again, I mean, maybe it's expensive, but after you do it, you realize that you should have done it way before. As I think with more things in life, it's like if you're waiting to do something, just freaking do it. Like, definitely do it sooner than put it off. And then the second thing, like I recently upgraded my monitor to like a 4K, and it's so much better. Like, holy crap. It's like I should have done it sooner. And I mean it is an expense as well. And because you get stuck in this state of, I'm making do with what I have. And you don't know by how much it's gonna change your life. So you don't go for it because you don't perceive the value yet. You only perceive the value like after the fact. And I think, I mean, it's probably logical because like if you can't know the value ahead of time, you don't know. It could be better or it could be same or it could be worse. And if you're happy where you are, why bother making the change? So yeah,
it really depends.
But then I think there's plenty of cases where you make the change, you're like, wow, this is considerably improving my life. And sometimes you make the change and it's like, eh, whatever. But yeah, you know, never try, never fail.
Yeah, I think it really depends. But it's the thing with me is like, I find like most people starting out, let's say, okay, this could be a good segue. So like one time I was having a conversation with one of my friends and we were talking about like content creation.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentioned to me that she would like to create content for fitness,
yeah,
and record videos at the gym and post on like social media.
Right.
And she told me that for like a year. And then after a while, I was asking like, oh, what's up with this idea? Like, mm-hmm, are you still going to do it? And then yeah, she mentioned to me like, oh, she has to buy some things to be able to do it. And then I asked like what? And she mentioned to me, you know, some things, you know, like some luxury things, some things I consider to be luxury when, mm-hmm, it comes to fitness or like starting to record content, like,
right,
4K cameras and, yeah, like, you know.
Well, hey, so like, it's only natural because, you know, after we recorded a couple episodes, it's like, how much do those 4K cameras cost again? Maybe I should go for 6K open porch full frame one because, you know, then you can use it for other things. And it's like, do I really need one at this stage? Probably not. But the brain goes there, you know.
I agree.
But the thing is, like, if I were to wait until I have a 4K camera to start, that, mm-hmm, is worse than starting with a potato camera and at least doing something.
Exactly my point. You see, like when you're starting out, like you don't have to wait for when you have like a MacBook Pro, mm-hmm, 2021 before, yeah, like, or like you need to have like an ultra wide screen, yeah, to do what you have to do. I think when you start, like you start realizing the things you actually need,
mm-hmm,
to improve, because most of the things you will be thinking out, like, will be things that you've seen on other people, and maybe you don't even really, yeah, need these things.
Yeah, it's a little bit of that cargo cult again. It's like, oh, all the professional YouTubers, yeah, have this and that, therefore, yeah, unless I have it too,
yeah, exactly,
I don't count. It's exactly, it's not the same. But even for this, you know, I've invested a little bit of money into this production. I could have, mm-hmm, probably stayed where I was, but it's just nicer. Like I got this microphone mount for myself. Like last week's podcast, I had the new microphone, mm-hmm, and I was using a stand that it was a very budget option. It didn't really work quite as well. And, mm-hmm, I thought I could do with this, but having a microphone arm would be so much better. And it's not, yeah, that expensive. So I got one and now it's like powering the microphone right,
yeah,
there.
Exactly.
And I'm reusing the microphone stand that I bought originally. I'm using it for the webcam to like put, yeah, it up, exactly, at the right height. So I don't have to stack a bunch of boxes to put the webcam on. So like I'm framed, yeah, better. And,
yeah,
I could have not done all of those things, but I did because I now understand that. Because, you know, if from the outset I said, you know, I need to spend a couple of $100 on a microphone, a couple of $100, yeah, on the arm, start, on the stand, on the lights, on the sound, yeah, card, on this, yeah, on that, on that. It's like, oh, wow, now I'm like $5,000 out before I even begin.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, potato webcam and a microphone, you're good to go. And then you start acquiring, yeah, things as you move along.
Exactly. And that's what I think. I think I'll compare that to like when you buy a house, you don't just start filling it up with different things. I think you can take your time to like figure out the things you need as you go, yeah, as time goes on. But I think it also depends on like different people with different personalities. Because some, mm-hmm, people, if they don't have everything, they really cannot do it.
I think that's an excuse. It's a good enough justification not to do something because I am materially prevented from doing it by this factor. It's like, no, you're not. You're just, you can justify it to yourself, yeah, your inactivity in certain regard. You can say, oh, well, I'm not recording a podcast because my webcam is bad. It's like, no, you're not recording your podcast because you're lazy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for problems instead of solutions, you know, you're never going to start.
Yeah, I mean, I agree totally. But, you know, like, another thing about this is, like, because nowadays everything, like, is all, like, remote and, like, you need more, you know, you need to have your own setup and all these things. I think it also has some effect on, like, interview processes. Because recently, I was part of the team that was conducting an interview. And then we were, like, meeting the person, like, really new. We didn't know this person before, so we were talking. And then in the moment, it stopped me, you know? Like, I was thinking, like, would it feel the same if we're actually, like, in the same room together right now? Because, you know, before now, I've been in interviews where, like, it's in person and, like, maybe body, you can see body movement, you can see, like, body language, you can see different things, you know?
Yeah, you can end up building a preconceived notion of a person in front of you, but just by the way they look, right? Because they say, like, the first presentation of yourself is the most important. You can only do a first impression once, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you can see these things are available, but with remote is quite different. I think the way about it is a bit different. So I'm wondering, like, do you feel like this affects the quality of, like, interviews these days, like the remote interviews?
I was just thinking that, you know, you can set up like a fake persona and do an interview through like a voice changer and apply both of yourselves to the same position. If you manage to score both interviews, like, see how you get perceived, where you're like yourself on camera, your natural voice versus no camera and like a voice changer and like anonymized resume that like is basically the same skill set, just not the same person, where you don't have any identifying characteristics. It's kind of like when I started doing blind auditions for orchestras to kind of perceive people on the merit of how well they play the instrument rather than other factors. So yeah, it's I think there's some interesting possibilities in there, but for most part, you know, does it also mean that people don't have to invest into how they present themselves as much? You know, it's an interesting question, because before, if you want to look professional, like, I remember working when I was doing consulting, I was working out of an investment company, and my family back in Russia, we knew like a tailor, and so, you know, we just bought some fabric and he made me a couple of tailor-made suits that are like really fit really well. Basically, it was like an equivalent of like a $2,000 suit made very cheaply. And so in that sense, you know, I bought myself some nice shirts, some ties. It was like a very, very sharp professional look. And I remember at first it was kind of like, oh man, suit, it's like so, it makes you so stiff, you know? But eventually I started appreciating the fact that that presentation immediately raises how you are being perceived by your peers, you know? So it's a big deal. As much as people like to pretend it's not, it's a big deal. And now in the time of, I can just turn my webcam off, nobody knows how I look, or I don't have to invest into that side of me as much because it's remote and who cares. But I think that before, that was a one aspect of this entire picture. Like, you, it's, I don't know, it's the equivalent of like going to the gym and skipping leg day. It's not complete, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta have some weird thin match thickness legs and then like bulky bulky chest, and everyone's like, yeah, that guy's skipping leg day. So like, if you don't invest into that part of you, it also affects your personality, it also affects your people skills. Like, it's not just how you present yourself through what you wear and how you hold yourself. It's more than that. And I think that people tend to discount everything else that has to happen for that whole ensemble to work, you know, because you would see a lot of people who don't know how to wear a suit, it shows, like they look ridiculous in it. Maybe they buy the wrong size, maybe they don't hem it right, they don't know like the basics of, you know, oh, you know, when you stand up, you put the button on, and when you sit down, you undo the button, right? Like these things, right? They all make a difference, and you have to cultivate a whole bunch of skills for it to integrate fully into you. And so if you can discount that area entirely now with remote and Zoom and webcams and face filters and all of that kind of stuff.
You know, this thing became more apparent to me, actually. Like, I've been in, like, some, even, like, other, like, interviews or maybe meetings or with anyone. Before, your first impression or, like, your impression of you is based on, like, maybe how well you dress up to the interview or, like, maybe how well you dress up to your meetings. That's how you are perceived, you know? And also depending on how, what you know, and things like that, like the main content, but the first impression will be based on how you look. But now it's not just based on how you look. I think there is more things to it now. So for example, like you can, some people invest more in like, how their image look on these virtual platforms.
Right.
So like, you know, you want to have your lighting, you want to have your speakers, you want to have your distance, you want to have everything. And I feel like maybe it puts a bit more pressure on it. And I'm not too sure if it affects the quality really in these interactions. Because maybe some people have more privilege to have more sophisticated appearance online than in person. But I don't know if that's even a bad thing or not, because if you can do it, then maybe you really are this person. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know.
I think it really doesn't make a difference because nobody turns on their bloody camera anyway. So
for interviews though, like,
oh, for interviews, for interviews. Yeah, fair enough. You know, have you have you seen those like the filters, appearance filters, where it was like a month ago where like a girl on a video would turn on a filter and she's like perfectly made up and it changes the facial structure, makes her like three times more attractive, and then she turns the filter off and she's like a regular girl. No, and it was just like holy, and it's in real time and it's so good you can't even tell. So
that's interesting.
Like having the, you know, business filter, you just turn it on and just like draws a suit over you that's like super sharp and, you know, makes nice haircut for you and everything. You know, if you haven't been sleeping, like gets rid of the bags under your eyes, the whole thing, you know, just creates this virtual persona.
That'd be nice. That would be actually,
I mean, it
nice.
Already exists. I wonder if people are using it for that setting, because it has to be plugged in through whatever infrastructure you're using. Like, I think those filters like on an app, but if you can extricate them out of there and plugged it into this, you know, like I have my green screen behind me so I can filter it out and put some different background. And, you know, I have some AI based filters for voice processing. Like both our rooms are not acoustically treated, so they're very echoey. But when I do the post on these, I get rid of it through like a plugin. And in theory, there could be same plugin for the face. I think even I use DaVinci to cut the video, and the commercial version already has AI with various filters where you can just do the face. It will automatically clean it up. So, you know, if I invest a little bit of money into the license, I could probably start doing that as well. And you wouldn't know. Well, I mean, you could probably look at the video from the future and the video from the past and compare and be like, but I can say, oh yeah, I just got better key lights. So.
Yeah, you see, then it kind of like supports what I'm talking about, because then you can see like these things are probably essential there, like your online image. Before, you just worry about like your, see, before now, when we go to the office, I remember like I used to work at this company where like most of us devs, we really don't I think it's a deaf culture generally.
You really don't care about your physical appearance for most
part. You probably just come to the office with a t-shirt on and
jeans
a,
and
you know,
t-shirt.
Just with a hoodie on or something like that, and then you see other people in sales with like suits, with like white shirts, with ties, and like everybody looking your part. But nowadays it's different. But now I just feel like, and that was in the office, but now it's different. Like you don't really know who will be on the call. Maybe you do, or maybe not, but you don't really know who you might end up talking to on the other side of the camera. And so like you might want to invest more in like the appearance online,
right?
But by the end of the day, I think it probably would be nicer if you can have like a playing field for that, like everybody can get to use that
Well, or something. Like, you know what, I think that everybody is going to be using what is available to them to their advantage, and to expect people not to do that, it's kind of silly. And why shouldn't I use the tools available to me that are at my disposal to improve my situation? Like why? That doesn't make any sense. The other thing too is, it's like, sure, yeah, we can come to the office in jeans and t-shirts, wearing hoodies and whatever, but how much does the suit make a man, and how much does the man make a suit, you know? Isn't there some sort of corresponding effect? Like, if you're dressed well, you feel better.
Exactly.
It shifts the dynamic too.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of says, this is a professional environment.
Mm-hmm.
So there are immediately standards applied, right? And so I think in a sense, it's like the loosening of the standard in personal appearance. But you can't just loosen the standard in personal appearance without inadvertently loosening other standards that you don't even know about, right? Maybe not. So it would be interesting. I don't know if there's a ways to measure it, but I think there's something to it. And I remember it was kind of funny too, because I was a consultant and most people were wearing suits and shirts, but they weren't wearing ties. And I was like the only one guy with a tie. And so I was getting, in the beginning, I was getting looks. I was getting like sideways, like, oh, who does this guy think he is wearing a tie? He thinks he's better than everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And I had a couple of really nice ties, and you know, there was a time where I was like learning new ways to tie a tie, so it like looks more interesting.
Fancy.
Yeah. Because I mean, it does distinguish you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And so I think there is a lot to it. On one hand, from a very utilitarian perspective, the intrinsic skill isn't really affected by that, so what I wear is mostly immaterial. But then on the other hand, it could also make a very big difference, even psychologically. The problem is that you have to kind of pick a path and stick with it, and it's just more effort. And everybody wants to minimize their effort. It's also natural. We want to conserve our energy. We want to minimize effort. And in the virtual world, it also makes it kind of silly. It's like, well, who am I wearing this suit for? And the answer is technically for myself, right? But also for other people. But also you have to fit in with, if you're the only one wearing a suit, that creates a weird dynamic. So in the end, you still blend in with the group that you're with. We talked about that a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
You have to fit in with the group you're in.
Yeah.
And I think like in-person presence, you can also elevate the standard and have an expectation from everybody. And I think that also signals, it's like, if you have expectations in regards to what I wear, you're definitely going to have expectations about the conduct and the quality of produced things. And like one expectation is like a domino. It sets this reaction of all of these other expectations, which also kind of normalizes the whole concept and equalizes all of them, where like even how you dress is important. Other things are also important, but even that is important. That should tell you something.
But you know what? I'm glad we talked about this, yeah? Because I was also wondering, like, do you think with everything being remote also like makes interviews generally, aside from like the look part of it, do you think it makes it easier? Do you think what do you think is the effect of like remote interviews on like the quality of interviewing,
I think
actually?
remote interviews favors the interviewee mostly because, in a sense, you are fighting on your home turf. You are in your comfortable environment. Before, you go in for, I don't know, I remember going to like Amazon for an interview and you're on their turf. You go in, they assign you that temporary badge. You go through that weird bank grade, single
I
person
know.
only door, rotating door because it's like a high security environment. You're in the conference room, there's like a panel of people in front of you, they all like stare at you. There's immediately this imbalance, like you're intruding upon their domain and you have to be proven worthy in your capabilities and your faculties and all of that. But at the same time, there's also the fact that you're outside of your element. Sorry, there's like some kids playing outside. I might have to close the window. Just give me one second. Or, I don't know, maybe they stopped. It's fine. And so now you're at home. You can wear comfortable clothes. You can have your favorite drink. You're not in person, so that puts a level of disconnection between there. Because sometimes with interviews, it doesn't get like it never rises to the level of an altercation, but there's confrontation because people ask you questions and they expect certain answers, and when you don't give those answers, or if you like start asking questions that they don't expect, it raises the level somewhat. Like I remember being in interviews when it's like, clearly this person expects a very specific answer from me and I don't understand what they want. And I'm trying to get them to give me more clues and they're trying to get me to give the correct answer. And then there's like this clash, right? And so you can feel the interpersonal dynamic like shifts into this more, especially, I don't know how it is, how it works with women, but when it's like guys interviewing other guys, the tensions start to rise a little bit. And so at least for us, having that one level of disconnect, it's like, well, I can disappear from the entire situation by pressing a single button. So that's very liberating in a sense, right? You don't have to, you don't have to, you can discount a whole class of potential dangers, just get them out of the picture entirely, and that also have an effect of calming you down. So I think in that level, it definitely balances it out, and I think it favors you a little bit more.
I agree,
I mean,
absolutely.
it's all of the same points are valid for the other person too, but because they're hiring you, they're already in a sort of elevated position. And now maybe you were before you were here, so maybe it's not that they got better deal out of it, but you got kind of brought up a little bit more. I think on like a psychological front, I think it should make it much easier for people to interview.
I totally agree. I totally agree. But one thing I'm gonna put also on the table is like, it's true, it favors the interviewee, but I think in an interview, especially in tech, yeah, I don't know in other industries and like in other domains, but one thing I've found out, like, yeah, in a lot of interviews, in all those interviews that I've been in, I feel like one thing I've noticed that most people feel like the interviewer knows very much about what they're talking about, like the subject, and you get nervous when they bring up this subject. But everyone is actually, I feel like interview is a very interesting process, because as an interview, you are looking at the interviewer like, I hope you know what you're saying, or like, I believe you know what you're talking about. And then the interviewer also is hoping that You better know what you're talking about. But at the end of the day, like, we're all still learning these things, and we should all be feeling at ease and like respect each other. I think what really matters the most in an interview is like the mutual respect to each other, like the fact that we get to talk to each other about working together. We should have some certain level of respect. But when there's that those clash, I think it's that's when like there is no respect in this interview. You feel like you are on a certain pedestal, and like the person you're talking to has to be stupid,
Yeah.
like you
And
know.
the other thing too, there's this unfortunate situation that I've observed sometimes, not always, but sometimes, where the interviewer, like, I don't know, they work at some fancy company or some FAANG company or whatever. They're like getting the big bucks. They're working for the Googles and Amazons. And I don't know if it's deliberate or subconscious, but they're like trying to flex on you by asking all these questions, like, hey, look how freaking smart I am. I work at Google. You don't work at Google. Who the hell are you? How about you tell me why the manhole covers are round? Like, you with that question, like, get the hell out of here with this stupid question. And so I remember when I was doing interviews, I wasn't necessarily even going for the technical aspects because you can't adequately gauge a person's technical ability in those circumstances. I think the best type of situation I was in was with one company that I ended up not really working with, but they basically said, we don't do interviews. You just work with us full pay for 3 weeks. And if we like you, you continue. And if we don't like each other, then we just part our ways and that's it. And that was really
That'd be
good
cool.
because
That'd be
you
cool.
have a meaningful chance to look, to just get plugged in into it immediately. And you get paid the full rate at which you would get paid if you were to be hired. So you're not doing any free labor. Like a lot of companies, like, hey, here's a take home assignment. It's like, yeah, you just want me to do free shit. No. And ultimately, the kind of stuff the company was doing, it didn't really grab me. I thought, like, oh, I don't really see myself doing this every day. But overall approach to how they get their people, it was interesting. It was a bunch of years back. That was a company, it was a fully remote company before remote was even a thing. So they had members all over, and they built tools for remote work. And they were dog fooding their own product really like a lot. And it was kind of funny. It was like a Rails shop. And back in those days it was like, oh, if you're building Rails, you have to have a MacBook, otherwise it doesn't count. So like I went out and I bought myself a MacBook. I still have the MacBook, by the way. Where was I going with this? Yeah, so the level of antagonism where the interviewer is trying to flex on you by show you how superior they are, and they're like all the gotcha questions, all of the trick questions, all of the questions. It's weird because like there's a whole class of questions. If you know the answer, you know the answer. It would be possible to come up with the answer on a spot, but that doesn't prove anything.
Absolutely.
Everybody goes through that 1001 questions they ask you at a Google interview and just remembers everything. Everybody goes to LeetCode code to grind algorithms, and then they're gonna be like drawing pixels on screen, moving divs around in React, and who gives a shit about algorithms? Like none of that applies to their day to day. So overall, the whole interview process is just like, to me, it in a lot of ways it's very silly. And as I was saying, like when I was talking to people, I would ask them, it was like, what brings you to the industry? What makes you excited? Like which things excite you? What, like, can you tell me about some technology or some framework that really kind of you think it's really cool and you want to try it out? Because you can kind of tell, you can tell way more from that than, oh, can you write me a depth first search binary tree? And I was like, oh.
Actually, I totally agree with this. Like, it should be more conversational. Like, you should be able to feel each other and like learn something. Both of you should be able to learn something from these conversations, you know, like, but it's true, like there were times where like you've been in an interview and you just know like this person doesn't just wants to show but like themselves as being like the interviewer, like I
And if
decided to
it's in
get
a
into this
group
company or
setting,
not.
it's like, oh, they want to show to their colleagues how much better they
Yeah,
are compared to you. And it's just like, oh, get the hell out of
exactly.
here.
Exactly. Exactly. But it is what it is. It's the world we live in now. It's
Yeah.
how the things
No,
go,
I mean,
so.
it is what it is. That's true. But I think that this online thing definitely is changing the dynamic, hopefully for the better.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's also this rise of, oh, these automated systems for doing take home assignments or questions that are like algorithmic, and they like there's no direct communication as much. It's like you have to go through the sieve, the set of sieves of like the filtering in order to get anywhere. And that stuff is black box and arbitrary. Nobody knows what the hell's going on the inside. And so in that
Yeah.
way, it's getting more depersonalized. So I think that if you follow with the crowd, you're gonna make the situation worse as an employer. But if you figure out a way to not do all of those silly things and have it bring it back to, hey, like, last time I was doing it, I wouldn't be even sitting in a conference room. It was like fall or spring, I don't remember. So it was like fairly nice weather, no rain. I was like, let's just go outside and like there's this big office complex. So we just walked around the office complex and just chatted
Yeah.
about computers
Yeah.
and what makes us excited about different things. And it was like a much better gauge of the person and why they're there, as opposed
Yeah.
to anything else, really. And
Yeah.
so, yeah, I think that part is important too, and a lot of people seem to, because I think in a lot of ways it's also modulated by like labor laws. Like you have to give everybody the same set of questions so you can objectively compare them to one another. That I mean,
Maybe.
you can't do it naturally. Like no person can be objectively compared to any other person, because it would take you their entire lifetime to ask all of the questions that matter to make that comparison. So you have to do with this silly proxy of asking 10 questions from a list and then asking the next person the same 10 questions and trying to make some meaning out of that. Because if you don't, you'll get sued or you get like into some legal trouble. So
Okay.
you can't just talk to a person. Like it has to follow the same format or HR will get upset. And
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I think that must also be part of the reasons why it happens often like that. But anyway, I was reading this book. It's called The Achievement Habit. I forgot the name of the author now. But yeah, The Achievement Habit. And in one section of the book, the guy was suggesting about having like an improved interview process. He said like he would prefer to have his interviews like on a wall. And then it reminded me of like one time I had an interview at Microsoft, and that process, like it is like five stages to it. Like different people get to talk to you, and one of them was just we're just walking to the restaurant, and I find myself feeling more comfortable talking to this person on our walk to the restaurant than the rest of the people that I was meeting, like in the conference room
Because
with,
again, now
like,
you're out of that element
yeah.
where there's this imbalance, right? You're both just two guys walking on a street to the
Yeah.
restaurant to have lunch.
Exactly. And it felt even like lighter and like I felt better. But the other, you know, when it just felt very like if you might end up going to jail if you've missed the answer, like it just felt very strong. But it's the game, and we just have to figure out how to play it. And I don't know, we don't control it, but it's just these are just suggestions. But anyway, yeah, I hope it gets better in the
I
industry.
think if you can psychologically prepare yourself, it's the way of the samurai. You have to live as if your day is last. You have to be prepared to face death at any moment. And in a sense,
Exactly.
like if your expectation of the interview outcome is that you don't get hired, you can relax. You
Yeah,
can you
I
can you
guess.
I remember going for an interview, which was sort of like they came out to me in a way. I wasn't, I mean, I was looking, but it wasn't like, oh my God, you know, if I don't get this, my life is over type deal. It was like, if I get this, it would be nice. If I don't get it, I'll look for something else. It's way more relaxing. And I remember just like trolling through the whole thing. And then they like, they hired me. And it was like, I worked there and I enjoyed the process, you know, for a bunch of years.
Yeah, that definitely makes it better. So, like, it gives you some form of confidence.
Yeah, it is. It's like a mental trick. But I mean, I was doing the same thing back in the day in school with exams. It's like, I know what I know. And there's no point in trying to cram things overnight because it's just useless. It's like, so, I mean, maybe it's not the best strategy, but I'm not min-maxing in my life. Like, I'm not trying to optimize every possible situation. It's like, you know, it is what it is. Whatever happens, whatever outcomes, maybe the consequences or the outcomes could have been better if I were following some strategy, but I am who I am and I live my life the way that I feel is most natural to me. And obviously this is not a universal advice. You gotta do what makes most sense to you. Exactly. So, but these were the things that kind of helped me psychologically to not feel that imbalance. It's like they want to hire me and I have valuable skills. Exactly. And so if they're not seeing my valuable skills and they don't know how to apply my skills to their situation, it's really their loss, not mine, because I'm really good at what I do.
Yeah.
Like if you have that mindset, I think it'll give you the confidence. And I know like a lot of people, like there's big part with the imposter syndrome where you think that everybody's smarter than you in this industry.
Yeah.
Right. So there is
that.
There is definitely that.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny part is they probably think the same way too, right?
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what I was trying to say when it comes to like the interviewer and interviewee conversation. Like most times the interviewee probably feels like, oh, this person being an interviewer must really know and like a lot about what they're talking about. But then the moment you get into the company or like the moment you start getting to know, then you start realizing like, well, I don't know, like they're not probably like as high on the pedestal as you have actually placed them before actually getting the chance to know them.
But you also have to hang out with people who are legit way more competent or smarter than you. Like I know a whole bunch of people who are definitely on the next level.
Yeah, I mean, that helps.
We don't hang out, but like we used to attend same type of IT and tech events in the city. And it's like, wow, this guy is like on a next level. That's admirable, you know, this is like inspiring in a sense.
Yeah.
And so if you don't feel that, I think you probably put yourself in the trap of your own making where you're too complacent. And you think that, like, if you start thinking that you're better than everybody else, that's where your skills are starting to take a nosedive.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. Like, you cannot feel like that. Like, you know more than everyone else. Mm-hmm. No. I think even outside of tech, in life generally, like, you cannot have this type of mindset. Like, you're better than everyone else because just like you are working on yourself, everyone else is doing the same thing. And everyone is developing at different levels, at different speed, and like on different factors. Like, it's different. So you just have to respect everyone. And like, I think the key word that I would suggest would just be like respect, because you never know. You never know. Like even someone who appears a certain way, it's just an appearance. When you get to know the person, like they might have a different level of content than you.
It is true. Yeah, I mean,
you never know.
So appearances, going back to that whole thing, on one hand, you know, it's funny because like appearance can be a proxy for something, right? As a measurable factor. And anytime there is any kind of factor that determines your position in like the competency matrix, inevitably, just through game theory alone, there's gonna be people who will try to abuse it by signaling all the right things without having the backing.
You know? Yeah, exactly. You see, I noticed something, right? You know, like, I have this happy feeling. Like, I'm always, like, eager to talk to a lot of people mm-hmm. who are, like, very experienced in the industry. You know, like, many years as we talk.
Yeah.
And I have noticed the difference with people who have a lot of experience and people who are starting out, and also people who have started and are gaining experience. Like, you can really tell, like, when mm-hmm. you start talking to them. For example, like, when you meet, like, a experienced set of people and you have conversations about things, you notice, like, most times they, like, tend to, like, really listen to you and, like, try to really pay attention to you, and, like, they don't really, like, force their knowledge on you. They will tell you what they think about their opinions and, like, but they don't really, like, argue or, like, force opinions on you or anything mm-hmm. or, like, show you that they really have experience. It's you'll be figuring it out in the conversations, like, oh, this person is really sound. Like,
yeah, it's like they give you their experience and you choose which parts of that you want to absorb and incorporate into your own life, right?
Exactly, you know, but when you talk to, like, the people, the set in the middle, those are people, like, they've started a little bit and they've got to a certain level, and now when you talk to them, it's like, oh, they know everything. Like, oh, they start giving you terms. Yeah. They start giving you, like,
to name drop a lot.
Yeah, like, they start giving you, like, oh, you know, especially, like, let's say, like, in an office settings, like, they start bringing out, like, things that are broken, things that can be done, like, you know, like, they start, like, and then you're wondering, like, what? How do you know so much? And, you know, like, how do you know so much? You're just wondering, you know? But also, like, on the other set of people that are just starting out, like, you would know, you know, like, because then they just...
I think when you're just beginning... you know that you don't know a lot.
Yeah.
When you're very experienced, you've seen the extent of how much you don't know, and that humbles you. But it also, in the contrast, it gives you an appreciation for all the things you do know. So you can be very kind of methodical and articulate about it. And if you're in the middle, you haven't seen the chasm of your ignorance yet. And you think you're on top of the world and you're like the smartest guy out there and all of your opinions are gospel and everybody should just shut up and listen.
Exactly. And I know too.
I think back in the day, like before we started the podcast, we were talking a lot about like what makes people seniors versus not.
Yeah.
And it's, I remember saying, it's like, oh, you know, now somebody works 3 years in the industry and they're like a senior all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think you have to see the chasm of your ignorance and come out on the other side humble, then maybe you can justify to yourself that title. And I think maybe for some people it can happen in the span of 3 years, but I think for most people it's not gonna go that way.
Well, yeah, it depends. Everyone learns at different
speeds. No, everybody does. So it's true. I'm not trying to say like it's impossible, but more often than not, I would kind of, you know, keep my judgments about seniors with 2 years and 3 years of experience.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, I think there is a difference between knowledge and experience. Like, I think there are two different things.
Knowledge and wisdom,
They're two different things.
Yeah.
Like, wisdom and, like, wisdom, which will be experience in this context.
Knowing how to use your knowledge for the best possible outcome versus just, I remembered an encyclopedia and now I can spit facts without even understanding what they mean.
Yeah. They're two different things because
I think... Yeah. Oh,
One
go ahead.
comes with time. One comes with time. So for example, if like someone with 20 years of web development experience is talking to someone with like 5 years of web development experience, of course within 5 years you should have seen a lot of things. And but like 20 years, this person was there before we even started using like these new browsers and like all these like different things. Like
Yeah.
so in addition to the knowledge that you have, they have the ones that don't even work, and like the ones that have worked before, like the ones that could
Yeah,
probably don't
yeah.
work,
It's
like
like you
different things,
like
like
you haven't even seen all of the things that got filtered out in the meantime.
yeah,
Like
exactly.
you like new people, they come at a time where they can just take the cream off the top and be completely oblivious about the path it took to get there. And I think that might create a certain level of arrogance without knowing, you know, all of the, you know, it's kind of, I mean, it's a story as old as time. It's like the new generation tends to completely ignore the sacrifices the old generation did prior to get them to a starting point that they are now. And so they think they're better than everybody on that virtue alone or on that nature alone. I was gonna say something else about it, and I think I kind of forgot.
I mean, well, like at the end of the day, like I think
Oh,
having
yeah,
respect
I
is
remember. I remember what was I gonna say.
oh,
Like,
okay.
back in the day, we were in India, and we ended up staying because there was like a lot of Tibetan refugees in there, and we stayed at a Tibetan monastery that's built by refugees in India, and they have different. I don't know exactly all of the different aspects of it, so I probably will be incorrect on a bunch of things, but essentially, that particular monastery or that particular branch is concerned with the study of the holy texts. And so they explained us how this process works. Firstly, you have to memorize all of it without necessarily understanding what it says, just verbatim, like a tape machine. You just memorize everything. And so what would happen is at sunrise at 4 o'clock, you would see these monks. They would have these scrolls laid out in front of them, and they would just sort of monotonically kind of read and repeat, read and repeat, read and repeat, just go through this and memorize the whole thing. And so they said that the way the exam works for this is that whoever is examining you will start reading from some place in the texts, however many thousands of pages that they have, and they would stop, and you're supposed to pick up from where they stopped and continue without pausing. Like you have to know
Interesting.
everything verbatim. So they
Interesting.
would, like, you know, it's not like they even tell you like Bible chapter and verse. They just start reading some portion of the phrase and then they
That's
stop and you just
intense.
continue. And
Intense.
the other, and once they reach that level, they kind of graduate in the next level where they actually start to analyze, debate, analyze the nature of what's being said. So first part is completely mechanical, no understanding necessary. Just bootstrap it all into your brain. Once you have it there, so you don't have to like flip through pages. If you're in a debate, if you're like in a theological debate about the nature of divinity, and you want to recite some particular passage, you can just do it from memory because you know all of it, right? And you're both are in the same position. You have access to the exactly same set of knowledge. So when you debate,
Discrepancy.
there's no discrepancy and there's no pause. It's just immediate recall. You plug it in and you go from there, and you can analyze it and do whatever. Maybe I'm not entirely correct, but anyway, that's kind of the approach. So then I was joking about, oh, I memorized an encyclopedia. That kind of brought that episode back.
Oh,
But
yeah.
then the second part is that if you fail your exam, I think maybe you have a second chance to retake it. But if you fail it again, they kick you out of the monastery and they kick the guy out who was teaching you out of the monastery as well for
Wow.
failing to
To
train you
teach you.
properly. Yeah. And because the monastery provides housing and food and everything else, that's pretty big loss, and status as well, right?
Hmm.
But it is kind of interesting is that you have to obtain mechanical rote memorization of facts so you have the information at your command before you proceed with analysis and trying to discern finer points in meaning. It's a different approach, because a lot of times people without the necessary background and information start talking about topics in which they have very surface level knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. like the quality of outcomes of that, I don't know how great it would be.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That was like completely besides the point, but I thought that was an interesting story.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, because like when I just remember now, like, you know, in many conversations with the middle class people that I mentioned, the middle category,
mm-hmm.
when we have conversations, there's a lot of like technical jargons that comes in our conversations. And I just feel like they were just memorized, like, oh, every time someone mentions this, you say that, like, but I can't really tell. Maybe people are just really smart like that, and they just know these things within a few short period of time. Because, yeah,
I think jargon can definitely mask. On that same thing, it's like signaling without substance. You can drop a lot of jargon and people will perceive as if you know, but
yeah.
I've encountered cases where people don't know. They just know what the keywords to drop at what times.
Yeah.
And I got fooled by it once or twice. So, you know,
you mentioned that to me.
Game theory is a bitch, you know, you gotta be aware.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's the game and we have to learn how to play it, but yeah. it's what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much, Vasily, for your time today. I think I've gotten to the end of all my questions for today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice to learn your opinion on distance. And
yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I think it was an interesting conversation about...
Yeah.
We haven't really had a chance to talk much about the remote work and its implications, so I think it's definitely an interesting one. But yeah, well, thank you everyone for watching, and thank you, Mo, for being with us here today, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.